morning. So it is 8:42 a.m. You're listening to the Monday Morning After Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. So Clarissa and I are sitting in the studio with Zoe McLennan from The Climate Show and James Flanagan from Divest McGill. And we're going to talk about the pipelines and Justin Trudeau. So how are you guys today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not bad.
All right. Well, yeah. So we're going to discuss today. So recently the Liberal government approved the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline as well as Enbridge Line 3 and rejected Northern Gateway. So those are three projects that people have have been waiting for an answer to see if it was going to be passed or rejected. And they finally came to a decision recently. And I'm just going to go over a bit before we get into the discussion, a bit of the background on these three pipelines. So Trudeau framed these pipelines as being in best interest for Canada and a major win for the economy. And that is, I can't deny that that is true. There will be a lot of jobs generated from this, but we have to take into consideration all the people who are feeling not so good about these pipelines. And for example, there are many... although there are 39 out of 120 consulted Aboriginal groups that signed off on the project, a lot of them still feel fear for their safety as a result of these pipelines. They are scared that it's going to devastate their water supplies and bring few jobs to First Nations, and feel that consultations with First Nations were not sufficient. In addition to this, Trans Mountain will carry 190,000 barrels of crude oil per day, which is a threat to, if there's spills, this can be a big problem. As well as Enbridge Line 3 has actually been subject to having spills in the past. So an expansion of this line, although Enbridge is reassuring people that it will be safer this time, they're going to update their security, their technology. People are still very worried that the same company is building the same line, so that could result in more spills. In addition to this, Trudeau also rejected the Northern Gateway, saying it had become clear that it was not in the best interest of the affected communities, including Indigenous communities, to go through with the Northern Gateway. Some people were actually angry about him not going through the Northern Gateway. I forget her name right now. Do you remember her name?
I don't know it.
Anyway, she had a speech about she thought it was disappointing that he did not accept the Northern Gateway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. Just kind of like Liberal government stance on these issues, pre and post election, and what can we think about in the future of the passing of these pipelines? So, hi, James.
Hello.
So, just to start off, what do you think? Did you expect him to pass and reject these?
Yeah, or? I kind of did.
Yes.
I think it became most obvious when he passed the Ocean Protection Act. That seemed like the moment when the sort of buffering the ensuing decision. That being said, I was obviously disappointed. He's supposed to be a youth minister, and sort of came across with that in his campaign. And so I was definitely disappointed. However, couldn't say I didn't see it coming, to be honest.
All right. Yeah. Do you know what type of you've been following this a bit. What type of negative effects can we expect from these pipelines being built?
Well, I mean, the usual, right? The fact that we're still depending on fossil fuels, especially Canada in particular. I remember watching a statement by Trudeau talking about how it's his job as Prime Minister to get natural resources on the market, right? And he talks a lot about, having a sustainable economy and a sustainable environment, but given this economic model, it's basically a contradiction in terms, right? So, I mean, to explain that further, the idea that you can have an unlimited market on a world with, limited resources, you can't just dig fossil fuels up forever. So, I can see how he's trying to balance and parlay and make it politics as usual. However, I don't think we have time for that as a species, right?
Yes, I agree. Yeah, and also something to consider is the indigenous communities. I was trying to follow and find some information on how the consultations went down, and it just came up that it was basically a mishmash, and it was not...
What do you mean, like a mishmash?
Like exactly. A mishmash, it means that it wasn't... there wasn't a very good plan laid out. Mm-hmm. Like the consultations were kind of just thrown out there, and they didn't go all the way through with a lot of them.
Oh, okay.
As you heard, there's only 39 communities that signed off on it. That doesn't mean that the rest of them rejected it. That means some of them didn't even answer to the consultations.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's just lots of indigenous communities feel like they didn't go all the way through with the consultations and just passed it. And mm-hmm. some of them didn't have time to reject it mm-hmm. or even come up with an idea. And I think that's an important fact to take into consideration,
sure.
especially since Trudeau seems to be very, very adamant about, he talks about indigenous communities a lot in his rhetoric. And he talks about having to include them and think about them and really give them a voice in this new government, relatively new government. And I find it interesting that for two huge projects being passed, it doesn't seem like there was that much consistent consultation done throughout these communities.
Yeah. I was wondering, I don't know if this is like relevant, but did Justin Trudeau have any opinion on the Dakota Access Pipeline? Did he speak out on that? Or
I think, he can't really speak out. If he does have an opinion, he's not really... I don't think he would be allowed to even until he comes to a decision. I don't know. What do you think?
I can't speak to that. I mean,
I
wouldn't be surprised if he was very, you know, ambivalent and ambiguous, and talking about economic growth.
If he had an opinion pre-election, I don't think he's allowed to discuss it now.
So, yes.
This is kind of where having these two pipelines passed gives us a night. Makes us think about Energy East and Keystone XL as well. Mm-hmm. What they're going to do with those is something we got to think about now, because if they apply the same logic that they applied to these two that they just passed, it seems like those might get passed as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Have you read about these two pipelines?
I mean, a little bit, but I've read more about how they've been stopped, at least temporarily, to begin with. And I think you can expect a uniform... like popular movement against them, just like you found in Dakota Access Pipeline, in Keystone XL. That seems to be more of the trend that I'm discerning. Because like whether or not they approve them or try to push them forward, I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of resistance, and it's been building and building. So, yeah.
Yeah, I find those could bring up more of a movement.
For sure.
People have been talking about them a bit more. I feel like all the ones that are that have been passed were a bit more under the radar. There wasn't as much.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not exactly sure. It just seems that like some pipelines gain more momentum as some. Well, there's several reasons. It depends on the land that they're going through. Mm-hmm. Depends on how much oil they're going to bring in. As soon as there's more jobs involved, more people talk about it.
Yeah, this makes
there's
sense.
A bunch of like. Variables that makes a pipeline show up in the media more, or if there's really movement like the North Dakota Access Pipeline, mm-hmm. everyone's talking about it, and we have to keep in mind that all the other pipelines have similar effects to the environment, but people just don't talk about them as much, mm-hmm. Especially Line 3. I was reading that it really didn't get a lot of media attention. Line 3, and it's going to be the biggest of all of them that have been passed. Mm-hmm. And it got less attention because it goes through less communities. Mm-hmm. But still, it's huge, and it still does affect several communities. So it's interesting that it didn't get a lot of media attention. That is an interesting thing to think about, I think. Right. The fact that some pipelines get like popular to hate while others are just like flown under the radar.
Yeah, definitely. So about the Keystone XL, why do you think it's going to have like even more momentum?
Because it involves the states, and I feel like it's also been something they have talked a lot about in Trump's election, because Obama rejected it, but Trump fully supports it. So I feel like it's tied into that all of that, which is talked about
messy.
At great length in America and the world. So it's messy, and Trudeau accepted it in the past in wake of his election. He supported it. So it's just, we got to I feel like it's just entrenched in so much politics right now that I feel like people are going to talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah. also the Liberal government, but recently as I was looking up on these three pipelines, the Liberal government did say that it is not necessarily necessary for economic expansion for Canada. It would help, but it's not necessary. So that's good to read about, because that's coming from the Liberal government.
Do you think that means anything, though? Like,
it could mean nothing. It could just be like, oh, let's just give them something nice to hope for now that we've just passed two pipelines.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, another thing, I was reading Trudeau's speech and that he gave during this, and it felt like every time he talked about the economy, he cushioned it with either talking about the Oceans Protection Plan that you talked about, or the fact that they're going to get rid of all coal energy in a couple years. It's like he was trying to lessen the blow a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's promising, not because of actual policy, but the fact that he feels obliged to put those things, that means that there's serious pressure on him.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt for a minute that he's, you know, probably pretty stressed out right now.
He is probably pretty stressed right? out. Energy East didn't, I don't know if you were involved in that, but I know a lot of Divest McGill people went to Ottawa. Mm-hmm. To protest Energy East. Mm-hmm. Did you go?
Yeah, it was actually for Kinder Morgan.
Oh, Kinder Morgan. Yeah. Sorry. I was sure it was Energy East. Kinder Morgan. So that's the one that was passed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it was before it was passed, but yeah.
So I remember I interviewed Sophie Burks a couple weeks ago about that Kinder Morgan pipeline, and it would be very bad for Trudeau's image as a youth minister to pass a pipeline after a bunch of youth just protested it. Yeah. And I think that probably gave him a lot of pressure in retrospect.
Oh, like, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's betrayal, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, really? You're looking out for our future? Really?
Really? Exactly. And like you said, it's promising that in his speech, it shows that he's pressured. But then again, it's like not fast enough, you know?
No.
Yeah.
It should have, he should have showed this, the government, or governments in general, politics in general, should have shown this pressure years ago.
Politics are very slow.
They're very slow. Yeah, I agree. That pressure should have been shown years ago, and now we should be taking actual action. But as we were discussing before, it would have to take an entire economic...
I mean, that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it'd be pretty unreasonable, but that's like the growing reality. And the whole sort of like green capitalism thing, you know, like we've been recycling for decades. Where has that gotten us? And not to say it's insignificant, because those kind of steps need to be taken, but I mean, there's a big picture here.
Yeah.
Right? And we're kind of inching towards there, but we don't have time to inch towards there.
Mm-hmm.
Towards, you know, an actually sustainable economy, because we're just getting less sustainable, you know, or rather like we're little tiny steps, but it's
not fast
enough. It's marginal, right?
Yeah.
And now it's going to be even slower or worse, obviously, with Trump.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to be like the downer.
But yeah, we got to remember that. I was reading up on that. This might divert the conversation a bit, but I was reading up on Trump and the environment, and although many of his stances are horrible and are very detrimental to the environment, at least if you actually nitpick everything he wants to pass, it would take more than 4 years for him to change the things.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's like, it's not reassuring, but it's like, at least it's like, okay, we have 4 years.
Yeah. Right.
So that's it for anyone who was like very, very terrified. At least most of the things he can't just drop out of the climate, the Paris Climate Agreement. Like he can't just he can't. So we just got to keep that in mind. So that's good on that point.
I'm more calm.
Yeah, you're more calm. Yeah. Don't be too calm. No, you can be more never. Calm.
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely a sense of urgency, because I mean, right on the election day, at the same time, also, a very important event was going on. There was a climate summit in Marrakesh that was sort of the follow-up to mm-hmm. the Paris Agreement, which was just an agreement. There was nothing actually binding. And so, you know, a lot of countries went to Marrakesh in Morocco to sort of hash that out. But when Trump was, you know, decided to be the president-elect, the conference dissolved, right?
Oh. Okay.
More or less. I mean, because what kind of serious climate action can you take with a man like that in power? And so I think, if anything, it's a wake-up call to, you know, the environmental movement and beyond, obviously, that this is urgent now, right? I mean, 4 years, like, that's, we have to be active every day for those 4 years.
Yep.
Right? And that's, it is, it's nice to have some breathing room, but, I mean, that's a window, and that's, it looks like that's all we got, I guess. I mean, yeah. Right? So, at least there's no illusions now.
I think that's a good thing. I think that having a window gives almost more pressure on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe it will be able to sway people, people who aren't, believe in climate, like people who believe in climate change, support movements to get lessen the effects of climate change, but never get involved, might actually be swayed to get involved now, which is good.
This is true. Hopefully, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
this maybe. Is all speculation, really. maybe it's my liberal bubble speaking, but
we are having a little bit, but yeah.
So that's it for another episode of The Climate Show. The Climate Show airs 8:30 to 9 Monday mornings as part of the Monday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM. The Climate Show is produced by Zoe McLennan and Simon Bandarab and is a CKUT co-presentation. Climate change isn't over, but our show is. See you next week.